one of the things that people forget is that the 80s was 44 years ago, to be exact. I think 1980 was 44 years ago.
I can't deal with that. No, which is 45 years ago.
Is it 45?
Because it's 2025.
Right. So it's 45 years ago.
45 years ago.
45 years ago. So a lot of people, especially unfortunately, you know, people our age, because I think this is what happens with generations and stuff. We kind of like go through time. Time goes a little bit faster and you realize like time just flies, you know? And I think when you think of the, when I think of the 80s, I don't think like so long ago, but that's almost nearly two generations now.
Yeah. No, right. It's got to be.
No, because I think a generation's like between 25 to 30 years per generation.
So
almost two generations ago has it been since 1980. But there's so many beautiful things that came out of the 80s. A lot of things like that, even like hip hop came out of the 80s. You know, that's where it was born in, you know, and created and developed and all that. You know, obviously I'm a B-boy. That's when the you know, things came out of that. Disco died, which... You know, I love disco, but, you know, I think it went on at the right time. There's so many things, you know, so many beautiful things that were made in the 80s.
Yeah, I was. I'm an 88 baby. Yeah,
me too, bro. So that's what I'm saying. So it's, but the thing is, it's just like, you know, we seem to forget that that was nearly two generations ago. And there were so many cool cars also that were developed at that time that have been forgotten about that. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I think the introduction of technology that was starting that to be too. Pioneered then that would come into its heyday in yes. the later vehicles, like we saw in the '90s with the JDM cars and a lot of the halo cars that we've kind of sought after. We saw the technologies that were being developed in the '80s that came to fruition on those vehicles.
I think especially for the combustion engine at that time too, there was a lot of innovation happening. A lot of, you know, even though, like I said, it was very underpowered compared to its predecessors at the time, it was a different time. It was kind of like the beginning of like what we're seeing now, which is to me so amazing. But also, again, it's one of those things that we're constantly always just forgetting about because we're always moving forward. Technology is always getting better. And then all of a sudden, we just leave them in the wayside and it just becomes a nostalgia piece. But go ahead.
So there were two factors that really I feel played the biggest part into that. It was coming out of the gas crisis, mm-hmm. you know, ending in the late 70s, going into the 80s. You started to see the gas prices come back down or come to a reasonable level. You weren't having the fuel shortages like you had in the 70s.
Right.
And then you also had the advent of computer-aided design, yep. computer technologies, you know, more integrated circuits into cars, things like that, where you had an ECM that could do fuel strategies and things like that at the very entry level. So you started to see the introduction of like HEI systems and you're starting to see the multi-port fuel injection and you're actually having the technologies that were only mechanical at one point now becoming electromechanical.
1,000%.
So actually we were talking about this before because we had been discussing this. I think one of the greatest ones to lead in with would be the early Civic or the early CRXs, right? So
perfect example. So I kind of wanted to talk about this. Now, first, before I go into, because mind you guys, as you guys are coming in, we talked about, we usually do these podcasts off of conversations that we're having at work and stuff like that. So we wanted to kind of talk about some of our favorite cars from the 80s that maybe you guys don't really talk about that much, or there's a specific generation that has been forgotten and then another generation is just more known. And for me specifically, I wanted to talk about the first gen CRX just because the first gen CRX obviously is the introduction to what I remember as a childhood. I know that the second gen, the SI, was one of the more popular ones and it was more innovative when it came to motorsports in general. But I think that without the first gen, which, you know, without this first gen, there would be no second gen, right? Obviously, as plain and simple as it sounds. But I think that you look at this car now, look at this thing. I mean, it is completely beautiful. I don't care what anybody says. That box look that the 80s have will never be replicated again. And even if someone tried to do it now, like let's say a car company tried to do it or Honda tried to do it now, it just wouldn't feel the same. It would just feel like a copy. I think it needs to, unfortunately, it needs to stay I don't know, fortunate, but it needs to stay in the 80s just because that's what I've, when I look at this car, it reminds me of a lot of things that I saw as a child, and it just, I want to keep it there.
You got to see the wide body, like the Mugen wide body one that they did. Max, if you can pull that up, there's a I think there was a modernized version of it that they also redid, which also came out really nice,
right.
A couple of years back. Right. But the motorsports that car actually got into, I feel like, was the entry that the CRX, the second gen CRX, really catapulted on and really took advantage of.
Right.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, there was an SI model,
yes,
for the 80s, the Gen 1 CRX as well.
No. Well, from what I know, the SI model didn't come until second gen.
Okay.
Yeah. Which we can check on that later on, but I'm almost positive that the second gen was when the SI introduction was made of the CRX.
Okay.
But the first gen, you know, it came with a, so it had two, so now we're going to go on a little history lesson, not too far because I don't want anybody to flame me so much, but it had two versions of it. Obviously, like everything, there was an economical version and then there was the sport version. It came with a 1.3 for the economical one, and the sport one came with a 1.5 liter engine, you know, which, remind you, at this time, these cars were not fast. I mean, we're talking about fully loaded 76 horsepower engine. So this thing wasn't like super fast, but from the research that I have done, and I've never been in one of these cars, but from 0 to 60, you're looking at about 9 seconds at the time, which is honestly, like I said, for that time, that was insane. You know what I mean? But and the reason why is because, and as we're talking about cars, you realize how crazy this is. This car was weighed at about 1,800 pounds.
Wow. It's light.
So that's why if you ever know the CRX, it's like, you know it for its being such a light car.
That's the Gen 2, though, in the video.
Max. Yeah. That is, it's for being a light car. And I think that for a person who was raised around drag and all that, that's the reason why that car was so powerful, so popular, okay. Maybe phrase. It was so popular because it was light, because although it was a little underpowered, there was a lot that you could do with it because of its weight and all that stuff. So, yeah, I think that first gen was honestly, it's one of those things that I feel like we don't talk about as much as, like you said, the SI and the second gen. And these are the ones that I, as a kid, saw on the street more often. But I don't know, just for me, it's one of those cars that I look at it and, you know, obviously there's not much you could do with it, but I would love to have one just to play around with, just to have, you know, in the garage. And even, what's his name? The Jay Leno, okay, recently did a cover on the 1984, the first gen CRX. Okay. Which go check that out. It's a really cool thing. But even the guy who owns the car is basically like, there's not much you could do this, you know, to the car as far as power. But for nostalgia purposes, that's why you have that car, man. It's a good looking car, and it's definitely something that I would love to see there people, you know. Yeah, look at that thing, man. Look, that thing is sweet.
See, me personally from the 80s, though, if I went with a Honda, I'm more partial to the, what is it, second generation?
Yeah.
So 87 to 89.
Right.
Prelude.
Woo!
So we're talking top of the line, four-wheel steering. You know, they had a more powerful engine. You actually got the 2-liter engines in a lot of them, where you would actually have like 108 horsepower, 120 horsepower sometimes in them.
Hell
yeah.
They
were really cool
for that time.
But if I was going with an 80s Honda, that's,
I get it, man,
right there for me. And now see that the one that Max has pulled up is like the most base model. They went all the way up to like a premium SIR2, where it had a spoiler on the back and it had like all the, you know, every bell and whistle you can imagine at the time. Honda went all out. That was like their top of the line flagship model, because you think about it, at that time there was no Acura at that. I mean,
right.
I guess Acura was just starting out,
right?
But they didn't compete at that same level,
right.
So me personally, that's where I'd be at. But in regards to the 80s cars, I mean, before we go too far off track, you always talk about your first car.
Yeah.
But I feel like this gave me the perfect opportunity to talk about my first car.
Hell yeah.
Which was a 1985 Cutlass Oldsmobile 442.
Okay.
So we're talking G-body.
Yo, dude, there's a guy on my block that has this car, and literally, like, you can see him working on it. That thing is pretty sweet. Loud as hell,
But does not go anywhere. They're so slow. Just so everyone knows, like, Rear Talking keeps up with the stock Honda Civic from the 90s. Like, couldn't get out of its own way if its life depended on it. But it was cool. It was in, I don't know if anyone remembers the movie Four Brothers.
Yes.
But there was that movie with Mark Wahlberg, and that was the hero car in the movie. And it was just so cool to see the car that, you know, this was my first car. Like, literally looked like that. I wish mine looked that good, but obviously it was my first car, so it did not look that good. But, you know, so much, it reminds me so much because it shares a lot of the same body lines as, like, the Grand National and the Monte Carlo. They're all cousin cars. They were all G-body chassis that Chevy made back in the 1980s. Mm. They all had kind of the same power level, which was not much to speak of. But I've always wanted to go back and recapture my childhood and do one with, like, a LS3 in it, you know, full modern suspension, modern technologies in it, and kind of resto it out, which would be my way of going with it. But there's just something, like, 80s cars have that look. Like, they you do, can man. Tell look the car was built in the 80s. It has those square lines.
Yeah.
Because nothing was nice and curved like we have today. It was just very boxy.
Look at how long it is, too, and with the two doors. Like, bro.
The doors were a mile long. You'd open them, and they weigh, you know, 5,500 pounds as you're swinging the door out. I mean, I very much enjoyed, you know, it was a cool car for its time. But, you know, we always get those chances. But after I had that,
right,
I had a Z31, which is what got me completely obsessed with Nissan, where I'm at now. And I love the 80s Z31s. And I know you're partial to some of the 80s Nissans as well.
Which is, that's why I wanted to. So another car that I feel like, again, when I say this, forgotten about, because I feel like a lot of people, the true car enthusiasts will mention it, but a lot of the people that are just, you know, car fans, I guess, in some capacity, really don't talk about this. We always talk about the R32. We always talk about R33s, R34s, you know, and so on. But we never talk about the R31. And I think that when it comes to the R31, obviously it's the seventh gen of this series, but because it's, you know, the Skyline has a long line of lineages when it comes to its make and chassis, whatever, you know. But the thing is, it's just like when it comes to the R31, I think that that's when that nostalgia of what we are so used to was actually introduced. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. A lot of the stylings that exactly, you see in the
R31.
Exactly,
that's what I mean. There we go.
And Max, you might be able to pull up the exact thing on this, but if I remember correctly, the R31 was the designer's first iteration.
Right.
And then he made the R32 after that, and then they picked up the body styles from there.
There you go.
I'm pretty sure that's how it went, but I'm not 100% certain on that.
Yeah. Yeah, but and the thing is it's also for its time. Like, this car off the lot was hitting 206 horsepower, 207 horsepower, which for that time, it was honestly going up that high in horsepower was really unheard of, man.
And that was on the RB20
DET.
And that was the GTSR submodel, right?
Yes, sir. Okay. This man knows his stuff, man. This is without even him. I have to look at paper. But yeah, man, same with this. And just hitting you with a little stats. From 0 to 60, you're talking about 7 seconds. Remember, I told you the CRX, because it was underpowered and because it was lightweight, it did hit 9 seconds. This one was a little bit more heavier. We're talking about almost 1,500 pounds heavier than the CRX, but still was faster.
But that's because they were also inspired by two different racing types. This was a Group A car, so you got to understand every inspiration that came into the car, especially on the high-end model, was inspired by their racing development. It had to be homologated. It had to meet certain standards to be able to use that platform in their racing.
Yeah.
So you saw a lot of that taking place at that time.
Yeah. And you know, I just wanted to bring it up because I feel like, you know, again, we always talk about those other chassis and whatnot, and we never talk about the R31 as much, you know. And I think that it's one of those cars that, you know, I know there's a lot of dedicated backing when it comes to our R31, but I feel like in the generic base, we never put this car up with the rest of those legends. And I think that this is one of those that, for me specifically, it was the beginning of this of the infamy of what this line eventually would become and is at this point. You know,
it really came down to the fact that the GTSR did not win like the R32 GTR did. The R32
Right, exactly.
absolutely came into Group A racing and dominated.
Yep.
The GTSR was a contender. Yes, don't get me wrong. The RB20 is a great platform, but it's massively underpowered for what you need, especially at that level.
Mm-hmm.
So you saw a lot of domination by a lot of the other teams, and you didn't see the development of that motorsports heritage until, I mean, there's plenty of race car versions of the R31, which are really impressive. But as I said, they just fell short of that milestone that was needed. So the Z31 was initially, you know, obviously that in its racing world ended up being overshadowed by the Cunningham Racing 300ZX, which everyone knows as being like the racing 300ZX, the race that Lugana Seca and tracks like that back in the 90s. But the Z had a racing heritage with the 280ZX, and then even the Z31. Both had a lot of racing pedigree.
Of course.
And they, you know, that goes back to the R31, where these cars were just overshadowed by the 90s version of the car. If there was never the 90s version that came out, we might be having this conversation completely differently.
Right, right.
But there was this point in time where they were the stepping stone to these great platforms that we know and love today.
Yep.
And I feel like that's what a lot of people missed out on by not being in our age demographic, because we got to see those cool 80s cars, and then we got to live with the 90s cars and then build the cars in the 2000s. So we got all the best compared to, I think, what the kids are going to experience today and what generations before us had.
Yeah, I agree, man. I think I think that's the reason why we're having this conversation is because of the simple fact that, you know, being a car guy, sometimes it doesn't just exist in the... Okay, so just like anything, once you're into anything, you kind of do your research on other things. And I think that that's why I've landed in so many of these earlier generations, to kind of see what inspired those cars that I was interested in as a kid. You know what I mean? And you start to see like, oh, like this, you know, obviously even like the CRX, going back to that, the Ballad, or, you know, and it coming, having its lineage beforehand, and then it being developed into the car that we love now.
So do you find that with you in other art forms? Like, being that you're very much into different art, do you like to see what inspired, say, a person that you look up to as an artist?
100%. It's like we were just having the same conversation about braking. You know, braking had to come from somewhere. You know what I mean? So you start to kind of trace back, like, okay, what exactly inspired this dance that was born in the 80s? Same thing with this. What inspired that version of the CRX, that version of what we were just talking about, the R31 and the R30? What inspired that? What created it? And there was a lot of factors. I know we're not going to be able to hit everything now, you know what I mean, but there were so many factors that played into creating this version of that car that eventually would become that version, and then all of a sudden a legend is born. You know, and I think that that's how it plays over time when it comes to creativity. Mm-hmm. That's what these, you know, and a lot of these, you know, the car that you're driving, someone designed that. Someone had the creative mind to build it a specific way, and you remember it that way, and it's built that way just because they decided to have that idea. And to me, that is very interesting to me. And then to look at like the progression of an engine, you know, starting off 1.5 to building and creating bigger, and then all of a sudden going from 100 to 300 horsepower. You're like, wow, like that all comes from somewhere. And to me, that's freaking, that is innovation, and that's beauty, and that's what I'm all about, is creativity, you know? And you as a mechanic probably understand that the most too, because that's what you're doing. You're picking and pulling apart and creating and making something better, and you're like, wow, look at this version of it. It started off like this, and now it's this. And that to me is life, man.
Yeah.
You know? Which reminds me, this is the last car that I kind of want to bring up, and I talk about this ad nauseum in this office, I think, sometimes, because everyone always asks me what are my favorite cars, or someone will ask me what's your favorite build. And specifically, look, remember, I'm a very visual type of person. That's the reason why I'm a creative artist, you know what I mean? And one of the cars that as a kid I saw and I was like, yo, dude, like, just, it's never going to be replicated. This one specifically is the first gen MR2, or Mr. Mm-hmm. 2, whatever you want to call it. Max pulled it up before he even said it.
That's how often he talks about it. In case anyone needs, as I break the fourth wall, he talks about it every day.
Yo, the reason why is just because the car, it just visually, it gives me that, like, I can see David Bowie in the car going down, going into Laguna Beach,
Some parachute pants Topanga, on.
Yeah, Topanga Canyon, just driving this thing with his hair flowing and with a lady right next to him. Like,
going
to me,
all of 35 miles per hour and the car's out of control. Yeah, sure. Let's be honest, it wasn't the most stable vehicle.
But visually, when you see this thing, when whatever gender that it is, it's just... Like, obviously, we all know, the spider and eventually
the W120, right?
Yes.
So that would be the second gen.
Yes.
Which was synonymous with that same 90s time period. We're talking about all the other ones. Yep. And then you have your MRS that is now a underrated track monster. Let me go back 10 seconds and say SW20. SW20. Sorry. Thank you.
SW20.
Yep, I can't remember. That's all right. Listen, I can only remember the Nissan chassis. You're lucky. I got all those.
Yeah.
So the SW120.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the MRS, which is a
probably
underrated track monster at this 100%. Point, thanks to every K series known to mankind.
Yep.
So we're starting to see, those cars come into their heyday, but it's really cool to see the little old guy get some love.
And I think that's what it is for me sometimes, I'm not the type of guy that's going to buy a car and get on the line and start, for me, man, again, I'll emphasize it again. I'm a very visual person. I judge my cars on more of capability. Like when it comes to what's the word I'm looking for?
Usability?
Yes. Like kind of, it doesn't have to be the fastest car, but it could be as long as it does his part and plays his part. That's what I'm looking for. I can't think of the words right now.
I think usability. I think you're fine because you want to be able to still take it out, drive it in the cans, but then be able to go to work and then be able to. I mean, you're not picking up much groceries in that, to be clear. So I had a buddy who had one of those. I think they came in a little bit later than the one you're looking at. It came supercharged or in that same time period. There was a supercharged one. And
I think it
loved
was the next
that
thing.
And he absolutely loved it. But I think he put a 2-liter in the front and that's about it.
Yeah.
Back from the store every time he went grocery shopping, just loaded it up and just made multiple trips since it was good on gas. But otherwise.
But again, and I'll say this again. I mean, this car top speed was going 118. It's not like the fastest car in the world.
With a strong wind behind it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we're not talking about the fastest car in the world here.
Yeah.
But when it comes to people who are love that 80s look, this was the one that always stood out to me. And I think, again, it's one of those cars that it was the model that created a lot of new versions of cars. It was Toyota's response to a lot of sports cars at the time were failing.
It's the Japanese Pontiac Fiero.
There you go.
So, I mean, that's really what it came down to is that the styling cues were very similar. It just had a lighter engine and was lightweight and responsive to drive versus the Iron Duke powered, boat anchor of a Fiero.
Yeah.
So this was light and nimble and controllable, and that thing was a death trap.
Yeah, so I think that if you look at all these cars, you obviously get my reference of why I like these cars. It's a lot of the 80s. For some reason, every designer was making boxy cars. You know what I mean? Like they were just creating these lines and these. And for me, that's what I'm looking at when it comes to these cars. And again, also, it was the introduction to a lot of these cars that we know today, man. And I think that it's nice to look at. And I'm just, this is what this podcast is about. It's just to remember those type of cars that really influenced us, And yeah, man, 80s was a cool time.
It was. I mean, I literally was only alive for 2 years, so I can't really attest to it. I was born in 88. But
I was born in 87. So.
But there were some like honorable mentions in there, too, that we didn't really talk about. There's a Nissan Pulsar Sportback, which is like this crazy thing that I think it was NX Pulsar Sportsback, something like that. Max, if you could pull it up, it is probably one of the most unique looking cars from that time period.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I could ever drive one. But I think that it's just
Look
such
that
a
thing.
Unique
that thing is sweet,
little,
man.
Little time period. Kind of has like that A86 Corolla look, But I, there's some cool stuff out there. And imagine you could take off that back section and take the T-tops or target top off, whatever it is. And it was like kind of like the Suzuki Samurai.
Yeah,
you could take off all the pieces and have like that beach mode. And that's what they did. I mean, I think it was all the rage. And you had pop-up headlights, which, I mean, you can't go wrong with pop-up headlights.
Oh, yeah, pop-up headlights was a thing, too.
That's crazy. Yeah, that, I mean, that was the best part about almost all the 80s cars. And then you saw that go away in the 90s, and the pop-up headlights were kind of that last hurrah.
Yeah. But if you, I mean, if there's cars like this that are kept mint, and like, which you're never going to see some of these in mint, just because a lot of people just tore these to pieces. But
they weren't sought after. They weren't collector's items. They, like, now it's, you know, now it's easy to go, okay, yeah, they're bringing in these cars from Japan and things like that. But nobody took a Nissan Pulsar. Oh, that was on the Z31. So on the Z31, it had a full digital dash.
I remember, yeah.
So you could get the digital dash. The only problem, and I'm sure I'm going to get that was some, like, people asking questions, there was an oil pressure sensor built into the dashboard. Yeah. And they ran a line from the engine all the way into the car, through the dashboard, through the firewall, up to the cluster. And then what was great is when it started leaking, you would lose oil pressure and it would drip inside the car. So this is the only car that I've ever heard of that you could blow up an engine because your dashboard is leaking. So the 80s time period is quite unique in that regard.
It's like when people ask me, they're like, so do you whip out a cardboard box? I'm like, no. What? That's like something that's from the 80s. For some reason,
they think you bring a cardboard box. I'm like, literally, like, go, a
cardboard box. I just shake it out, and that's what I'm like.
Do you have the big boom box with the D batteries in it too? Or is that not how it's like it works anymore?
Like, I wear Kangol hats and freaking an Adidas tracksuit. I'm like, no, that's not what everything evolves, you know? Yeah. So, but yeah, man, I think that, yeah, man.
And I think we're getting into that smaller engine, you know, even if everything changes with, you know, the political change that's taking place, I still think we're going to see smaller engines, just because once the auto manufacturers have moved in that direction, I don't see them reverting course enough to get away from that. So, like, when you get into, like, the turbo 3-liter engine in the Fords and things like that, those are going to be those engines that are probably going to be here longest to stay, right, in my opinion. You're going to see less and less of those performance-oriented engines. They'll be there specific, like the Mustangs and things like that, but I don't think you're going to see the big V8 you know, Land Cruiser again or anything like that. I think they're going to stay with that 6-cylinder model and things like that.
Like everything, you know, everything goes full circle. I think that a lot of the times, and again, it's always good to kind of look back at these things. And as cars enthusiasts, I think you guys all understand this, that, like, you know, it's always good to look back and say, okay, this was more efficient. This was a little bit more better. Why don't we use that technology instead of using this technology? Because it costs more, you know? And again, like you said, with a lot of the political changes that are going on, I think we're going to start looking backwards. I think we're going to start saying, okay, this is more cost efficient. Let's do this instead. Do we need this much power on this? I don't understand. Like, don't get it twisted. I'm a big fan of highly powered cars, but most people, we're not even allowed to go past 80 miles an hour.
I mean, yeah.
So it's like
allowed and due are two different things.
I think, and I think Max hit it on the nail when we had this conversation before. Like, yes, don't get it twisted, I do like having powered everything in my car. I love it. But if it's more cost efficient to be able to roll my car down like this, I don't give a fuck. Like, who gives a I mean, some people like the comfort, I get it. But if you had, like, different, like for this amount of money, you can get this version of it with less power than this one, I would be like, okay, cost efficiency, I'll take that, you know? Yeah. So, you know, and it comes down to, when it comes to engines, it's the same way for me, man. I don't really need, I'm a type of person when it, like, visually, what it looks like visually is everything to me. If I want to buy a race car, I will.
Yeah, I can understand that.
You know? Yeah. But yeah, there it is.
So that's the recap of the 80s.
All right, Max, hit me with an 80s song. I don't know, a good one.
Close you out on a good 80s song?
Yeah, good 80s song. Which is a good one?
I mean, something. What is it? Something in the name. What is the freaking, what's the?
What about something with?
Anything by Genesis, right?
Oh, let me see.
Oh, gosh.
Wham. What about Wham?
Oh, Wham, God, is a good Wham? Song.
There you go. Something from Wham. Oh, all right, guys. Anyways, thank you so much for tuning in. We appreciate you guys, and we'll see you at the next one.
Peace.